Welcome to the Real Talk of Dental, where we pull back the bib and talk about what's really going on beneath the surface. Not just the charts, not just the systems. We're talking about the culture, the chaos, and the confessions. I'm Brandy Marzolino, and with 20 years deep in this industry, I am fresh out of patience for performative leadership. This is your space to laugh, cry, question everything, and maybe shout into a pillow between patients. We've got anonymous confessions, we've got call-ins, we've got ops room drama, and we've got the truth, served hot and a little too real. Think of this as your backstage pass to the break room no one dares to mic. Until now. Hey, before we get started, I want to tell you about something that's changing the game for women in dental leadership. It's called the Empowered Leadership Experience for Women in Dental. It's a six-month transformational journey for women who are done with burnout, over-functioning, and trying to lead like someone they're not. This isn't just another leadership training. It's a coming home to your voice, your power, and your joy. If you've ever felt alone at the top or stuck somewhere in the middle, this one's for you. Enrollment is now open. Head to leadhership-experience.com to enroll. Because real leadership isn't about performing. It's about remembering who you are. Now, let's get into today's episode. Nathaniel Baker is one special dude. Key account executive at Overjet, and having only been there a few months and been in the dental industry for just a handful of years, this guy is already finding his way in the dental space because he is so incredibly real and honest and truly speaks from the heart. He's been in sales for quite some time, but I also learned that his original degrees are in physiology and physical therapy, and so we share a common bond over our love of fitness, hiking, and learning about ourselves through the outdoors, hiking adventures, and also all the fitness analogies one could probably come up with when it comes to understanding business. I really love our conversation because we literally touch on so many different things. We talk about the nuance in just living life as a business person. We talk about the hard stuff like OCD, anxiety, ADHD. We talk about AI, obviously, and the upside and downside of using AI in our lives and in our dental offices, understanding change, and a whole plethora of other things that we just really vibed over. And it was a really fun conversation. I'll definitely be having him back on at the start of the new year and talking about how we can set our intentions for 2026 in a unique way that's not your classic New Year's resolution. I'm really happy to introduce to you Nathaniel Baker, and I know you're going to enjoy the episode. Nathaniel, welcome to the Real Talk of Dental podcast. Super geeked to have you on. I know you are such a presence in the dental space with a senior position at Overjet, and you're just somebody who is very warm and welcoming and likes to talk about real things and shares about your own personal journeys and struggles, which I deeply appreciate and admire. And I can't wait to have this conversation with you. And one of the things I think that's so cool getting to know you a little bit better is your love for hiking. So I thought we could even start there because I am an avid hiker and outdoors person as well. And I think there's so many, like you were saying before we, you know, hit record, there's just so many lessons in the world of hiking as far as mindset and the journey and what it takes and all that good stuff. And you said that you hiked the 14ers with your dad at one point. Is that right? So do you want to share a little bit about your experience hiking and what the mountains and hiking has meant to you over the years?
Yeah. Thanks for having me on, Brandy. I love what you're doing and getting real. I mean, all of us, we need this. So thanks for having me on. So I grew up Colorado Springs. My dad was military. It's what brought him out here originally and where he met my mom. And when I was a kid, he became avid into the outdoors and would drag me with him. And I remember on some of these occasions, whether it was hunting or whether we were climbing these 14ers, my brother and I went with him. And I remember we were complaining the whole way through. We were always asking him, we're like, Dad, how much further do we have to go? How much further do we have to go? And he's like, it's just a little bit longer, you know, or it's over that next berm, or hey, we're almost there. And, you know, it just really took a lot away from the experience and the challenge of going from the bottom and then working towards the summit. And since then, obviously, I've hopefully matured and grown up a little bit. And when we've gotten back out since, we've done, you know, Mount Lincoln, a lot of the other ones, Pikes Peak out here in Colorado. And the appreciation for the challenge is different. And there were times when I was a kid, you know, my dad would tell me to wear extra layers and I told him no, you know, like I don't need that or I'm good. And then I would pay the price for it later. So very much an element of planning your trip. So where are you going to start? Where do you hope to end up? Do you know where you're trying to go? And just being real with yourself along the way. I think sometimes for people that are new into hiking, there's this culture, and maybe just because they're inexperienced, the stigma that you have to just like tear through the whole thing, or you should just be able to do it all. And even the most experienced hikers that I know will listen to their body. They'll take breaks, you know, if they need to, you know, drink or new electrolytes, or they need some little bit of nutrition and some food. And so just being present with yourself and how you're doing and responding is also really important. So yeah, a lot of lessons in hiking that we can extrapolate to life. But my dad put me through a lot of really hard things. And, you know, as a kid, I hated it. I didn't appreciate him for that. But he's one of the people I look up to the most when it comes to work ethic. It comes to setting goals and persevering and having grit when it gets tough. And now looking back, I can appreciate it a lot more.
I love that. Yeah. And I heard so much in that, you know, I always, one of my superpowers is finding literally lessons in everything. So that's how the lens I always look through life. And I really like what you were saying too, where you had a guide, you know, you had somebody that was telling you even like, hey, you probably want to bring some warmer clothes, or, you know, you might want to stretch prior to doing this climb. And you either listened to him or you didn't. And I find that's really cool in life too, whether, you know, we choose to listen to people that have come before us. And I think there's a lot of power in finding our own journey and our own experience, but also listening to the wisdom of people who have experience in certain things. I think that's really cool. And I think it's almost getting lost a lot of the time because of, you know, I know we can all blame social media or something like that, but it's the elders, you know, are kind of getting washed out by people creating their own opinions and ideas based in real time and whatever's being fed to them in the moment. And sometimes if you just step back and talk to people about their experience, I'm such a sucker for that. I love listening to people who have gone through things and how they navigated them and what they took away from it. And, you know, if they want to share some of their wisdom with me. And being a high achieving person myself, it's often a heroic act for me to actually listen to them, but I'm getting better with time as I have more bruises and battle scars. It's like, I'm choosing the easier, softer way these days. So that's kind of cool. And one thing we were talking about too, every time I think about Colorado Springs is the incline that's there that I think everyone who's ever been to Colorado Springs knows about it. And I forget, you probably know the metrics on this more than I do, but I don't know how tall it is. It's hella tall. It's an old like rail car thing or something that they put all these stairs on, and you climb it and it seems like it goes on forever. And I had this really interesting experience with my now husband when we were out there before, which was you're supposed to have these spectacular views and all this kind of stuff. And when we went to go hike it, it was completely socked in with fog and we literally couldn't see anything. And we couldn't see the summit, which was super fascinating because we had to literally go one step at a time and we could only see like maybe 10 feet in front of us. And it was such a mind game because we had no idea how close we were to the top. And we literally were just one step at a time, just committed to the climb. And what was wild was it forced us to get super, super present. But then also when we finally get to the top, it was so anticlimactic. And like we were talking about, because when you're on the climb, you can see the end and it's like this anticipation of like, oh my God, I'm almost there. Like one more minute, you know, or I'm just like almost there, like a couple more miles, you can get there. And we had none of that leading up. So when you finally get there, you're like, yes, you know, like you traditionally do in hiking. We got to the summit and I was looking around for more stairs and I was like, oh my God, we're at the top. And it was just like super, oh, okay, I guess we're here. We did it, you know, and it was like, let's have a snack, you know, and I did a handstand and that was it. And then we were on our way. And in the spirit of entrepreneurship or business or anything like that, really recognizing that the lesson and the experience is really in the climb. Most people have their eye on the end goal. Like once I get to that thing, then I'll have this experience or then I'll feel this way or that way. But I think, you know, you would agree to this now too, being so far along in your career, that in anything, the growth is in the climb, not in hitting the milestone. And it can be very anticlimactic once you actually get the thing, if you're not paying attention to the experience that you're going through and getting there.
Yeah, I mean, very interesting story too, because you need to come back and do it when it's not with the fog, because the view, the elevation change is higher than the Empire State Building. It's crazy how far you go.
Yeah.
But with anything, whether it's business, if it's personal, in life, a lot of people I'm sure are familiar with Tony Robbins, but I heard this 10, 15 years ago, and it has always stuck with me, is it's the meaning that you give to whatever the experience is or the outcome that is so important. And then also understanding the emotions that I may feel in the moment. And so if you look at anyone, whether you have a lot of, who's someone you look up to in business? I'm just curious.
Oh my gosh.
Maybe not non-dental.
Non-dental. I just have so much respect. Well, I mean, a guy that I've known for a very long time is Garrett Gunderson. He's somebody that I really appreciate. I would say he's one of my mentors. Teresa Eastler, she's one of my mentors. Absolutely love her as well. Roberto Monaco, he's somebody that's had a huge impact on my life as well in business. These aren't famous people, by the way. That's what you're asking. I mean, they're famous to me. Do you mean like celebrity business people?
No.
Okay.
No, this is perfect because it doesn't matter. I mean, you've got Teresa, you've got, you know, Garrett, these people who are important to you, and guarantee you've had these conversations with them. But if they were on the show with us today, they've had moments where they've had to deliberately choose to shift their thinking and their mindset and take something that arguably could be a bad thing, right? Or it's hard, but because they chose to look at it through a different lens, it had a completely different meaning and a completely different outcome. And that's why you look at you two people, whether it is chairside, whether it's a non-clinical position, or if it's an industry partner, insert the person. You can have two people doing the same job and yet have wildly different success and emotions as they go about doing it. So it's not the action, it's not the thing. And that's what everyone thinks it is. It's like, when I get to this, or if I do this, if then, it has to be conditional, right? And then in anything that takes time or that requires a great amount of emotional buy-in, the majority of it is going to be the suck. It's going to be the stuff where you don't have the results mm-hmm. and you're not where you want to be. And so if you do it on that conditional mentality of it has to be present or not, life's going to be miserable. But instead, just flip the script. I always say, you know, change the frame and then choose to focus on something else and give it different meaning.
Yeah, 1,000%. And I like how you brought up the suck, because something I coach about all the time when people are, you know, at a point of transition in or exploring, you know, a change in their life or business, I always say choose the suck, because that is ultimately what you need to come to terms with. Because every, you know, change, whether it be a business relationship, company, personal relationship, a move, you know, whatever, it always has this shiny exterior, and we all fantasize about the upside and we focus on the upside. But ultimately, we have to get really comfortable with the downside of it. We have to get really comfortable with the suck of it and say, what suck would you choose over anything else? You know, like when people get really frustrated with practice ownership and they're like, oh, I just want to be an associate. You know, I can't handle this anymore. I'm done. And it's like, okay, well, let's look at the downside of practice ownership or being an associate, and which one can you live with, you know? Or if they want to, you know, like you and I were chatting before we started, like I was exploring different places to live before, you know, I surrendered to Michigan and have made this now my happy Midwestern life. I really had to get present with, you know, well, what's the downside of these places? Because yeah, Colorado, sexy as hell when it comes to trying to find a cool place to live. Yeah, Colorado has a ton of upside, has a lot of downside, right? And so what's important to me, and the reality of me, I fantasize, I'm gonna live in Colorado and I'm gonna hike every single day and I'm gonna go trail running and I'm gonna fish, even probably I'll take a fly fishing. I'm gonna like do all these things. No. Like the reality of my day to day is like, I'd be lucky if I'm out hiking once a month these days. You know what I mean? So I can get stuck in the fantasy of it. And at this point in my life, I love getting on a plane, flying to some cool mountains and like hitting it hard for like a week. You know, that's kind of the reality of my life now. And is the Midwest more chill for my lifestyle now, where then I can use this as a home base and fly other places? Hell yeah. You know, that's what works for me right now. That's me, right? Everyone else has different preferences. But you really just have to look at what's the downside that you can live with, and can you live with that downside? So I always tell people to look at that versus the fantasy, because so often we get stuck in the fantasy of stuff.
Oh yeah. And you talk about coaching and practice ownership and maybe being an associate. And I think one of the rough, just the hardest, like real talk truths, not just dental, but in life, is, you know, people knock Jocko Willink and the extreme ownership mindset of it's really on me and always on me. And some people call it extreme, right? Like there are things that are out of my control and I can't do this. But at the end of the day, you're the one looking in the mirror and you're the one staring back. And I don't care if you're a private practice doc that's been in for 2 years, you've been in for 10, 20, you want to retire, you're part of a DSO, you're a DSO executive. It is on you to make the choice, the decision, and the mindset about what you want, because you control yourself. And it will always start there. There are other people involved. There's external, you know, environmental things, but you've got to be right with yourself. When you talk about the positive negatives and pros and cons of where you want to live, you can't do it for someone else. You have to do it for you, because you're the one moving. So whatever that is, take the responsibility of your own existence and your own life. And that's a really hard pill to swallow. It's really tough. And some people just avoid it altogether. You know, they just play the blame game. They point fingers. They have the victim mentality. And that's, again, choose your suck, right? I say choose your hard. There's always hard in everything. It's either you're going to be hard in the victim, you know, mindset, and you're going to have to deal with that, or you can do the hard things right now if you want to take ownership. But it's always going
to
be hard.
Yeah, I love that. And yeah, it is a lot easier to stay in the victim mentality for a lot of people. And I think a lot of people don't even realize they're stuck in the victim mentality and that they think everything is happening to them. Speaking of my buddy Garrett, you know, very long time ago, he had shared, you know, shift the mindset from this is happening to you to this is happening for you. And he probably pulled that from some sage Buddhist wisdom or something. But I do often, you know, have to really focus on that this is happening for me instead of this is happening to me. And when I open my mindset up that way, it's like I said, what is the lesson in this, or what can I take from this? And yeah, terrible things happen to people all of the time that are outside of their control, and they're not to be blamed for that, right? We truly can be victims in situations, like obviously, like footnote, you know, that's definitely a reality. But when it's often our escape, you know, or our parachute for a lot of things, is that, oh, this is happening to me, we lose our power in that. And that's something that I focus a lot on in my coaching work, is helping people restore their power and like their core. And you know how, like, obviously, I'm assuming you're into fitness because you're a hiker and you have to be in shape to enjoy your hikes. But you know how we know that our core is so critical for everything, how we feel in our body. If our core is weak, we got a bad back, which leads to all kinds of other stuff. And then it can hurt our hamstrings, which can lead to all kinds of leg stuff. And it's just like, if we're not positioning our core well, everything else just kind of falls apart. And I really focus on that, you know, from, I think that's a great symbol in everything in life, is restoring your strength, your core strength, you know, which is, what do you stand for? What do you believe? What's important to you? You know, bring the focus back to yourself so that you can lead from that place versus, oh, all of this is happening around me and I have no control over any of it, and flailing through life. Yeah.
Yeah. A lot of people don't know this, but my college degree is athletic training.
Yes. I like you even more now.
Thank you. I was going to go to PT school and, you know, wound up in sales and never looked back, right? And crazy to think I'm in dental. I would have never, you know, 5-10 years ago, if you had asked me if I'd be working with dental practices every day or dental groups, I'd say you're crazy. But I had some low back pain and some of my hamstring tightness, and my physical therapist that I go to, Mark, he's amazing. He's worked with a ton of, you know, the BYU few basketball team, professional athletes, Zach Wilson, you name them. But, you know, you think of Mark and you're like, oh man, he's so experienced. He's going to give me the magic bullet for this rehab protocol. And it's going to fix me. And he would have me record him doing the rehab protocol. And I actually have a blood pressure cuff, and you would actually fill it up to, you know, 70 in terms of the pressure. And then the goal would be is you put it underneath your low back, and then you do different like leg lifts and exercises. And the goal is to maintain the pressure within this range. And I remember leaving, and at the end of that session, I was like, Mark, this is it. Like, really, you just have this blood pressure cuff and you lay on the ground and you do this for two sets a day, you know, for, you know, 5 minutes. And he's like, yeah, that's really it. It's just the small micro shifts that when you do something consistently enough over time that you do it. And I think probably like everybody with PT, I'm avid fitness individual. I love health. The human body, it's so fascinating to see like how it responds to the environment and how we heal. And we could spend hours talking about that, right? But, you know, even I know I could do better in my rehab, right? Or there's definitely times where I missed and I didn't do my PT exercises, because oftentimes it's mundane. It's not fun, right? So, and I see that all the time. And no matter what someone does, whether it's personal change, you know, we're coming up here to New Year's. I frankly hate New Year's resolutions. I think that it's like when a lot of people think there's only one time a year where you can set goals, you know, and then what is it, 95%, 98% of people fail by February. It's like with that mentality, you should be doing resolutions all the time, right? And I really think there's been a shift as well in just society and cultural in general over the last, you know, 5 to 10 years, where mindset, a lot of this stuff is definitely more public. We're talking about it, and not just external, but internal, restoring your power, the things that you coach on that make it healthier for people to treat themselves with more respect and love. So that way, when February rolls around and they haven't hit their New Year's resolutions on certain things, just to accept it and say, it's okay. Like, I'm here with myself. You know, I'm expressing grace and love for myself as a person, because we're all flawed. We make mistakes. You know, no one's perfect. But I'm going to keep going because I'm committed to me.
Yeah. Gosh, I love all of that so much. And I love your story too, because I've been into fitness my whole life, and I've been sharing that about 4 or 5 months ago, I finally hired a lifting coach, because, you know, I'm at that time in my life where I really need to start lifting heavier. And I was kind of tweaking.
Oh, you need to lift heavy.
Yeah. And I was like tweaking myself a little bit, and I was hurting myself. And I'm like, this sucks. And I started feeling distant from my body. And I've always had a really good relationship with my body, but I started feeling like it was a little foreign to me, and I didn't like that feeling. And so I'm like, why am I trying to Frankenstein a freaking fitness program, because there's so much content online? And I, again, am a learner, high achiever type person. I'm like, okay, I can cobble together something from all of these influencers online. And yeah, I was so overwhelming. And I'm like, what am I doing? Why don't I just hire an expert, and she can tell me exactly what it is that I need to do that's specific to me? Because there's so much nuance, and it's something that I get frustrated with, where everyone goes to like YouTube or TikTok University these days, and they're taking all this advice from people that are just giving broad stroke advice, and it's not specific or nuanced to you as the individual. And I know you're in the world of AI, and I love AI. And I also, you know, that's one of just my beefs with AI, is it's only taking the information that you're giving it. So if you don't have a human on the other side that's, you know, dictating exactly what you need for you and picking up the cues or what you're not saying, right, to kind of cobble together a plan for you, it can make it a little bit harder. But I finally surrendered. I hired this woman. She's incredible. She's amazing. And one of the very first things she said to me is, you have terrible form. And I was like, what? I've been living my whole life. Like, I'm a beast, you know? And I felt like I was supposed to be this really strong person. She's like, form sucks. Your mobility's shot. And, you know, being my age, sitting a lot, you know, just going through life, our bodies start to compromise, and then we continue to have those bad habits, just like in business, just like in a dental office, right? We pick up these little habits and we keep doing them, and they compound and they compound and they compound and end up causing pain. And we don't realize like what was the source of that pain. And it's the same, you know, I use fitness analogies all the time when I talk about coaching, mindset, dental office stuff, because it's all the same. And you mm-hmm. have these pain points in offices. And it's like, okay, how did we get here? right? And, oh, we have bad form, right? Or we have bad systems, or we have bad protocols, and, you know, bad in quotes. And she really had to get me focusing on my mobility first. So I spent like the first 2 months on mobility, and I thought I'd be just like bench pressing trucks, you know, within 2 months or something. And this lady had me like opening up my hips and like opening my lower back. And like, she was pointing out how stiff I was. And I was like, oh my God, I am so stiff. And I was a flexible person at one point in my life, like super flexible. So it was really, speaking to your point, it was like getting back to that, the minutia of how it all starts, and getting that really solid foundation first before, you know, we can put on all these other things. And I think it might be a good segue to go into like using Overjet. I feel like Overjet and AI in general, it's like, it's a beautiful addition to the dental world for sure. And I'm a huge fan of Overjet, and you have like a badass, you know, founder and CEO and badass, incredible, brilliant woman. And so I like love that AI has come into the dental space, but it's also, you need to have a solid foundation in order for it to work, which I'm sure is something that you probably talk to your clients about all the time. Like, it's not going to come in and fix everything, right? And, you know, put this to work, and all of a sudden you're going to magically, you know, Nathaniel's the pixie dust fairy who's just sprinkling, you know, all this stuff on the offices. So with that, what's something you've noticed that's really critical in a dental office when they're going to start integrating AI, as far as, you know, where do they need to improve their form? You know, where do they need to get their core strength together?
I am magic. You can kind of sprinkle pixie dust here and I'll no, but Ward is amazing.
Yes.
And she was on a different podcast. And I remember right when I started, I had just watched this interview that she had. And what really stood out to me was she said that if we're not measuring clinical performance, then what are we doing? Because we are a clinically driven industry for now. I don't know, maybe 30, 40 years later, robots are going to do dentistry. I have no idea. But some critical things that I see with the groups that I work with, I'll use an example. I was on site with a group last week and had the chance to work with the CEO, met the entire leadership team, went on to one of the locations, talked with one of the associate dentists. So I had the regional brought over the associate dentist and had Overjet up, and we looked at the platform, and the associate said, I'm just so excited because this is another tool to support me in my clinical process. So the first two things that I see for anyone that wants to look at AI, and then Overjet specifically, is AI is here to stay. It's not going anywhere. And so that foundational mindset of, do I believe that the technology is going to be an investment into my group? Is it going to help us be able to go, like the hiking analogy, from point A to point B and improve our clinical performance? And if they believe that technology will be a value add, then the second piece would be, is can I build a system in where my clinicians see this as a support to their diagnostic process and it's not a hindrance? And that's really it at the end of the day, because if we look at all other components that augment or that supplement the dental office, it is run off of clinical production. If you don't have a dentist, if you don't have a patient, if you are not clinically producing dentistry, then nothing else exists. The RCM conversation and the challenges that we see there don't happen because there is no production, there is no patient scheduling, front office phones, all of those things are built on the bedrock of clinical dentistry. So when Overjet can come in and provide that support and that tool, where we have 7 FDA clearances, our AI has been taught with millions and millions of data points to continue to get better and better over time. It's just like us as humans, right? I mean, if you look at our lives, we would hopefully say that the longer that we're here on earth and the more experiences that we have, we start to recognize patterns and things that we want to do. Or, hey, if I do these things long enough, then it's probably not going to lead to a good outcome and I shouldn't do that. It's the same thing with machine learning. You do that long enough and you feed it enough data and the right kind of data, then it gets better over time. And I have seen groups that when they have those two fundamental pieces of the belief in technology as an asset and as an investment, and that it will drive and support the clinical conversation, then it's a fantastic add. The times where it's not good is where groups or individuals want it to be that magic bullet. They don't want to have those crucial conversations with a challenging provider who might not be living the standards or the culture that they want, you know, or between providers in the office or office managers. And I get it. Those conversations are hard. They're awkward. There's a lot of friction. And so naturally we want to run away from it just because of conflict. But AI technology is just a tool. And you could have the shiniest gold shovel that's embossed and it's got diamond plated. I don't know. But if you don't use it, then it just sits. And that's the challenge, is that there are private practices, there are DSOs, there are executives executives out there that there's so many things going on, they want it to be that one shot magic bullet, and it's not.
Yeah. God, there's so much to unpack there. I love it. I mean, from a coaching perspective, one of the things I see so often are people really shying away from having those difficult conversations. And a lot of times it's because they don't know how, right? So yeah. When I was mentioning Teresa Easler, she's also one of my mentors. She's, you know, a chef's kiss. I mean, she's an OG when it comes to communication coaching, and I had the opportunity to be one of her proteges in a lot of her work. So I really specialize in the art of success. Communication. And a lot of sales teams actually are really invest in this kind of work because you need to be able to communicate effectively to whoever you're selling to. And a lot of people jump into sales and they're not very effective and they don't understand why. And it's the art of communication, right? And or like you said, and one of your beliefs that we were chatting about earlier is the art of selling, and we're selling all the time. And how we're selling is through communicating, right? Like we are the brand, we are the whatever we're trying to be, right? Like it's who we are. So, but to have, you know, someone, you know, invest in some kind of technology to maybe prove that maybe this associate isn't right for the team, or to put a Band-Aid on the fact that, you know, maybe they need a lot of coaching, or maybe they weren't the proper choice, or whatever, the list could go on. I could really see that as, and it's also, you can even see it in something as basic as people using ChatGPT to write out conversations they need to have with people. That's one of my biggest beefs as well, is I see that a lot of times people are going to ChatGPT on how to handle difficult conversations and using the script that ChatGPT comes up with and then sending that to folks, and it's totally off, you know? And it's like, because you're only telling ChatGPT like a smidge of what is happening, and they don't know the full scope. They don't know the whole picture, and they don't know fully the person that you're talking to. They're only knowing it through your lens. That's why you need a human to pull the rest of it out of you. So I really like what you're saying, is that Overjet is an amazing tool, and you still have to bring 100% of yourself to using the product in order for it to be as successful as it can be.
And we understand too that I don't say change management anymore. I say suck management, because change sucks.
Yeah.
That's the reality, is going from one thing that you're familiar with, you're comfortable with, whether it's giving you the outcomes that you want or not right now, it's known, you know? So any organization, you know, your biggest competitor, it's not who you think it is. It's not the tech, you know, company down the road in Utah, or it's not, you know, the dental office across the street, or it's not the other regional DSO. Your biggest competitor is actually doing nothing with status quo, because we all just want to stay comfortable in what we're doing. And that's why we see so many times, you know, from a change management perspective or customer success or DSOs, even private practices, it doesn't matter how big you are. DSOs are just dealing with it at scale. It's the same problems they're just doing with 20, 50 or 100 practices. You have to take a group of people who are doing something one way and then teaching them. And like you said, being the guide and then giving them the path to do it a different way. So I would challenge one thing to what you said on the whole ChatGPT thing is There is a place for it, in the sense of it can be a great sounding board. What I agree with you on is if you take it and you copy paste what it says and then you just throw that out there, that's the problem, because all that it is, it's a prediction and analysis of most likely outcomes and behaviors. Machine learning is all about prediction. It's about patterns. And so it's just taking what the training data is as it has been given to it, what you talked about. You have to be a human, you know, to interact and do all of that. I totally agree. Don't just copy paste, but I've had great internal, external dialogues with ChatGPT when I soundboard with myself through ChatGPT on certain things. So to your point, whether it's crafting an email to a colleague, or if it's using AI or with technology, the human element is understanding the requirement that people are involved, and it's not just machines and it's not just outcomes. So what we do is when we deploy with a group and when we're running a pilot or we're, you know, growing and expanding in an organization, you know, we have 12 dentists on staff, and Overjet was built by dentists for dentists. So we're having dedicated, you know, training team for each of our groups, or you know, curated CE events on site for our groups or for our practices, and understanding that it should be a tool that supports. And I've seen that with clinical leaders where, you know, taking an associate or a group of associates, and they don't want to call out the performance and say, hey, this is where you suck or this is what needs to get better. But, you know, we will coach them and we'll do grand rounds and we'll have our clinical leadership there. And we have different strategies. So that way it's a safe environment to where the provider, the associate, the hygienist, whoever's involved can come into the conversation and that they have the chance to be vulnerable, but that they also have the chance to be real. Because if they're not willing to, again, take responsibility and ownership of themselves, and if they feel like they're getting attacked, then the walls go up and they just shut down emotionally or psychologically, then we know we're not going to get the outcomes that they want to. So that's a big initiative that we have at Overjet, is not just having a best-in-class tool, but also giving the strategy and the support so that way you can actually go deploy it into a group successfully.
Yeah, absolutely love all of that. And yeah, I echo the same sentiment with ChatGPT. I think it's a great place to kind of flush out ideas and read it before.
But don't copy paste.
Yeah. Just make sure you edit some of it first, for sure. Take the M dashes out too. Something. Just kidding.
See, that's what's hard too, is if any of us ever used like the long dash before it was a thing.
M dashes long before ChatGPT did. Now I have to take them all out so people know I'm not using it. It's the absolute worst.
It sucks, right? But just roll with it.
I really love what you just talked about, though, too, with Overjet, because just, you know, I think in anything with the changes and learning about how to use AI, and y'all taking the time to walk people through and, you know, minimize the, I guess, resistance and help people really understand how much it can help. You know, prior to us meeting today, I was also meeting with somebody who's also very committed to mental health and dentistry like I am. And I know you are passionate about it too, and really helping people have safe places to come forward and talk about some of the anguish that people go through in the dental industry. And a lot of it, I'm learning more and more too, and I'm seeing it, comes down to the inefficiencies in offices and systems and how that can lead to burnout. And you have a lot of people that have been in dentistry for a long time, and they're undergoing a quantum leap in technology and systems, which can be very hard and terrifying. It's another thing that they have to get used to, but also recognizing that it can actually create ease and it can help make things more efficient and take the burden off. That could reduce, you know, some levels of burnout and, you know, just systematize things. Because I think there's a lot of offices that don't have systems in place effectively. And they're just, again, kind of, I don't know, I guess kind of like me with my workouts, right? Like Frankensteining things together. And it's just not sustainable, right? Long term. And I think it's great that, you know, with the use of AI and technology in general, how it can really add another layer of efficiency and confidence and, you know, streamline processes and offices too, which is really great.
Yeah, you have to, you know, first and foremost, help your end user believe in the product or the technology or the tool that you're using. And if there is resistance or if there's sentiment that it's not that, then really getting in the weeds and fleshing that out to figure out what that's like. And then building that sustainable process that works for them. You know, I think too often we look at a lot of things just black and white, and it's not, there's ways for everyone to make it be impactful for them. But it's like when you talk to DSOs, you've met a DSO of one. You haven't met, every DSO is different. Every private practice is unique. We're all practicing dentistry. We're all, you know, clinically producing, but the culture, the office, the team, all of that's unique. And that's the hard part. It's having, and I think if I look at like my personal journey, I know we talked a little bit about this before jumping on, but clinically diagnosed with ADHD, anxiety, OCD. I mean, I've got the laundry list diagnoses, right? And so generally I'm always living in this state of unrest. Like my anxiety is usually at a 6, 7, or 8. Like I have to consciously tell myself to like take deep breaths. I find myself like like my body, you know, like life can just be so stressful and it can weigh. And a lot of that is what we choose to do. I'm in an industry where there's a lot of rejection, there's sales, there's like a lot of that can be from personal choice. But first, you know, the household that I grew up in, you know, I grew up on 10 acres. My dad was military. It was very much the rub dirt on it and stand back up and just power through mentality. Even today, it can be challenging to want to go see a doctor. You know, just because of how I was raised, it was like just power through it, right? And that's like the double-edged sword or two sides of the coin of every characteristic, right? Like I'm a very gritty and tenacious person. And the positive manifestation of that is I'm going to power through really difficult moments. I'm going to keep going. I'm not going to quit. But then the negative side of that would be manifested as stubbornness, or no, I'm not going to see a doctor, or if I'm sick, I'll just power through it. So for me, it was that really big step first of I am complete and I am worthy of love and I'm enough, whether I have one diagnosis or four or zero. It doesn't matter. I am enough. And I love myself enough to pursue whatever avenue or potential outcome so that I could live the best possible life that I could live. And I want to make that choice for me so that I am showing up and living as my best version of myself, whether it's for my three kids, whether it's for my colleagues, my company, my friends, my family. We all have that. And so I would hope to, you know, anybody out there maybe watching this and going through some of those mental questions of just anguish or stress or sadness, depression, or whatever that might be, just know you're not alone. Know that we're all going through it, maybe some more publicly than others privately. There are people who understand what you are going through, and you are always enough. You're worthy of love, and people are here to support you and would invite you to, if you need that, to reach out, whether just DM Brandy, DM me, or whoever it might be. That support system is there for you, because you just never know who's struggling. My best friend, his brother passed away 2 weeks ago in an accident. And, you know, there's a lot of mental things that were going on there. And I think all of us have been touched at least by tragedy in that way. And so no one's alone. We're all here for each other.
Yeah. Thank you so much, Nathaniel. That's really beautiful. Yeah. And I always love that Ram Dass quote, you know, we're all just walking each other home. That's one of my favorites. And, you know, whatever home is for you in the sense of, you know, your peace or trying to attain that presence of love in our lives, things like that. So really love that. And I really, really always appreciate when you share openly to when you're able to on LinkedIn. It's something that I was drawn to also, was how open you can be about stuff. And I think that's so important, because you never know who's listening. And there's a lot of voyeurs out there, right, who are checking things out. And I know that our words matter. And for those that don't resonate with it, you know, they can just keep scrolling. That's fine too. But it's, you know, for those folks that do hear. And every now and then, you know, more often now, I get stopped, and I'm sure you do too, where people will just pull me aside and say, hey, I really appreciate what you're sharing. And they don't dive in more with that, but it's just like, keep doing what you're doing, you know? And sometimes when you're talking into the void and sharing vulnerably, it can feel a little exposing, especially in the world of dentistry, where I always say it's the king of reputation management, and trying to look like you're somebody and, you know, all that kind of stuff. And you and I both know, and I've been coaching for close to 20 years now, people from all walks of life, all different socioeconomic backgrounds, and there's not one person who's got it all figured out. And everybody thinks that one person has it figured out and they want what they have. And if they knew the full scope of it, they wouldn't want it. So, and that's been healing for me in my journey. And like you're saying, really reaching in and experiencing that level of gratitude and all is fundamentally well, really being in that place and just recognizing that, like, folks like you and I, and probably most people in the dental space, we have it better than 0.001%, we're like the 0.001%, you know what I mean, of the entire world. So lots of gratitude for sure.
The last thing I'd say too, Brandy, is really true strength, in my opinion, is complete inner peace.
Yes. Yes. We are like two peas in a pod, Nathaniel. I always say my biggest success in life is inner peace and loving myself. And it's nothing tangible out there, but that's a lot of what I promote, is that place of contentment and being at peace with yourself. Because if you're not, that's what the chase is for a lot of people, is to try to feel okay. And if the chase is about feeling okay and feeling that, you're never going to get there. That's the thing.
Well, and if you're trying to emulate someone else, like, there's nothing wrong with taking effective strategies or like learning from the experiences of others, but you have the opportunity to choose what it means for you, because you're going to be left with you. Even if you get there, you're not going to be the other person, no matter how hard you try. And I did that for a huge chunk of my life, as I defined success based off of somebody else. And I tried to emulate whatever those things were. And then I would get to that point and I would still be unhappy and I was unfulfilled because I wasn't okay with me. And that's why I say now is really total strength, complete strength is that inner peace.
Yeah.
And if you can measure it that way, then not only will you have a more fulfilled life in whatever you do, but you're the one that's walking the path. You're the one in the ascent. You're the one climbing the mountain. And so get okay with yourself, because you're going to have yourself along the way and be with yourself through all.
Yes. Love it. Love it. Love it. Well, thank you so much for being on. I feel like I could talk to you for 10 more hours, but we do have a time.
We'll do another one, or we'll just chat offline.
We can do round two. I love having people on time. So my buddy, Dr. Jeff Grove, he's been on multiple times. So we'll have to have you back on in the new year, and maybe we can do something fun, helping people set intentions and, you know,
love that,
clearing space for that peace for 2026, which will be really awesome. But I'm so grateful that we had this time together. I really appreciate you being on, and Overjet is really lucky to have you.
Brandy, thanks for having me.
You just listened to The Real Talk of Dental. If it hit, if it stung, if it made you feel just a little more human, good. That's the point. This isn't about fixing practices. It's about healing people. And if you're brave enough to show up real in this industry, you're my kind of leader. Subscribe, call in, send your wildest workplace confession. And most importantly, don't clean up for anyone. The mess, that's where the magic lives. We'll see you again on the next episode.